morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to another great episode of Dark Reading Radio. I'm Kurt Franklin, producer of the show, and I'm getting ready to hand things over to our hosts, Tim Wilson and Sarah Peters. But before I do, wanted to let everyone know that this show is all about getting more involved in the IT security community. As part of that, we hope that you will get involved in the online community around this Dark Reading Radio show. On the page where you're listening, you'll see the Your Post box. We would love to have your voice in the conversation. All you have to do is type your comment or question into the Your Post box, then be sure to hit that big red post button beneath it. Tim, Sarah, Josh, and JJ will be joining the conversation at the bottom of the hour, and we're looking forward to a great discussion with all the members of the community. Well, to get us started with the audio portion of today's show, Tim, I will turn it over to you.
Thanks, Kurt. We're excited to have a couple of great speakers today. First, I want to welcome Sarah Peters, our senior editor. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm just doing fantastic, Tim. Thank you.
Well,
happy to be here.
Sarah and I are excited about this particular show because this is something that Dark Reading has been trying to do for the last year. We've been talking about community. We've been talking about getting more involved, getting readers to do things beyond just reading, but actually commenting and writing and participating in our online community. And we have two people online today who are among all of the folks that I work with on a regular basis are some of the most passionate and deeply involved in what we call the security community. We're going to talk a little bit about what that is in a few minutes, but this group of folks who work together on this stuff professionally and talk about it on a regular basis and make it more than just a job. So without going too much further, I want to bring in our two speakers today, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves. Usually I have a set bio that I introduce people with, but these folks are involved in a lot of different things, so I'm going to let them talk a little bit. Jennifer Minella her official title is the Vice President of Engineering and Consulting, CISO at Carolina Advanced Digital. So, but she's involved in a whole lot of stuff. So we call her JJ. Her maiden name was Jabish, so we a lot of us call her JJ. So JJ, can you talk a little bit about what kinds of things you're involved in and what you do, and then we'll have Josh do the same thing.
Sure. Hi, Tim. So I'm VP of Engineering at Carolina Advanced Digital, and in that role as well, I'm a consulting CISO, so I work with everything from Fortune 100 and 500 organizations and government, nonprofits, education, in that role. But a lot of how I've gotten involved in the industry, really, like you said, is with some of the other organizations. And I think Josh and I kind of round out the communities pretty well here. Again, we'll talk about what that means. But, currently I'm on the board of directors for ISC Squared at the international level, and I'm one of the elected officers for 2015. So that's an honor and a privilege, and definitely an eye-opener in terms of ways of getting involved in the community, since that is the largest nonprofit organization worldwide in our profession. So we'll come around to some of the ways that people participate with them in a minute. My other history, of course, has been on different local and regional boards with other nonprofits in the industry, including ISSA. I'm pretty active as a Cyber Patriot mentor, so the organization that runs those challenges for the students and the kids I work with are in high school. So other organizations like that are ways to kind of reach out beyond our immediate professional communities and start to kind of develop the industry in different ways. And with that, I'm going to toss it over to Josh because he's also big into kind of getting outside of the echo chamber and working some of these other angles.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Joshua Corman has been around this industry for a while now, and most of us already know him. But Josh, give us the overview of some of the things you're involved in.
I'm in my day job, I'm the CTO for a company called Sonatype, which is really a development, continuous development tool chain and DevOps enabler. But I'm very passionate about the security topic and have been since the beginning. I think there are very different motivations that draw someone to this hobby or profession. And for me, it was always to be a protector and to really do things that affect public safety, human life, or things of greater consequences. And as such, I've found a ton of value in different pockets of our various communities. I don't think we have a community. I think we have plural communities, but we'll get back to that. So some things I've done is I was a founder of a group called, or a movement called Rugged Software, which is to try to be more attractive and developer-friendly and create demand for defensible infrastructure. And then more recently, we've got a much more vibrant and active community called I Am the Cavalry, which was born out of the idea that the cavalry isn't coming, that no one's going to save us, and that we need to be a voice of technical literacy and a voice of reason and a translator and ambassador to the government, public policymakers, the public, and the industries we wish to affect. So I'm a big fan of sharpening your skills inside the echo chamber and communities of interest, but also, and possibly more importantly, being a teammate, an ambassador, and a translator to get outside the echo chamber so we're not just navel-gazing or screaming in the darkness, but also actually having an impact on the world around us.
Oh, thanks, Josh. Let me get you two to talk about, this was something that we've talked about in email and prior to the show here, how the security professional approaches their sort of vocation and sometimes avocation. We have a tendency to look at our jobs as, you know, firefighting. I know even as a journalist, you know, I spend a lot of time writing about breaches and you know, the latest threats and vulnerabilities and that sort of thing, and I get so deep into it that sometimes I forget that there's a bigger world out there. We've talked a little bit about how security professionals can kind of get past that sort of level of thinking and start thinking bigger. Can you guys talk a little bit about, you know, how do you see this evolving, and how should we be looking at, you know, our profession, you know, going forward? Either one of you.
I had a feeling Josh was going to jump in there, so I was giving that back off primer pause to let him go. but I have several ideas in this, and this does come to the idea of that we're talking, you know, throwing around what does community mean and how do you engage with it? Because when we define community, that's the first step in understanding how we engage with that community. So you know, getting into the industry. And the community spreading through. It's funny that we had this exact same conversation with a group of professionals. Josh, you were involved in that too, kind of defining what is the community. When we say someone's a leader in the community or an expert in the community or something in the community as it relates to InfoSec, what were we defining as the community? And I think we spent probably hours collectively with a bunch of people kind of trying to hash through that. Do you remember that conversation?
Well, there's a number of ways you could slice this. I mean, for one, there's the whole builders, breakers, defenders kind of idea, or red team, blue team, and purple teams. There's also, like, the practitioner community of CISOs and CSOs. There's the technical community. Even within the technical community, there's subclasses like the application security crowd, versus the malware crowd, versus the forensics crowd, or the network crowd. So I think it's a misnomer to say that we have a community. I think we have a community of communities. And more important to me in the last year and a half is really understanding our motivational structures. And, you know, I think for me, I got in because I wanted to be a protector and a defender, or for altruistic type reasons. Other good friends of ours, they do it for glory and recognition, right, the prestige. There's a different cadre entirely who do it for monetary gain or professional development. And then there's even groups like Anonymous and whatnot who do this for ideological or principled reasons. So I think the first step is recognizing we don't have a single monolithic community and we'll never have consensus, but we have pockets, and you have to understand where you want to go and what you want to develop before you accidentally subscribe to one tribe or another.
Let me ask you guys this. If there's all these little separate communities, how much do those communities interact with each other? Is there is there any kind of us versus them going on, or do CISOs and the developers manage to get along okay? Yeah, see, none of you are saying anything. It makes me think that there
that's a personal thing. And, you know, this is where we get into kind of the human nature of people and the way they interact with other human beings and the way they tackle challenges and, you know, their work. You could walk up to anybody at a conference or anybody, you know, on the proverbial street and kind of say, you know, do you get along with your counterpart in this department or this community or this whatever? And, you know, really the responses you're going to get are so dependent on that person's perception. And, you know, like Josh says, motivation is such a big part of this, and understanding why people want to do certain things and how and why they're engaged and the depth of that. But, you know, getting into, you know, Tim and I have talked a lot about relationships, leadership in the industry, building trust and communication. And when we get down to it, I always jokingly tell everybody, you know, humans are coded with an explicit deny. We kind of don't trust and don't like other people, right, until they've done something to earn our trust. And different people, that threshold's a lot different. And it, for some reason, for a lot of reasons, our industry tends to foster that instead of containing it and managing it. So we get in a situation where the skepticism and the criticism, the reactivity to things, Tim, like you were talking about, like, oh, God, there's this emergency, and we react instead of respond to it. So those things that are kind of inherently ingrained in human nature tend to really get amplified and fed through the information security profession just by nature of we're paid to be a little bit skeptical, and we're paid to be a little bit curmudgeonly about these things and critical. And a lot of building community and building trust and fostering those relationships between those sub-communities, and we're not going to call them subcultures because I think that's ridiculous, but they are little ecosystems and communities. But the first step in fostering that is understanding that we're tuned by default to do certain things, and we have to kind of overcome it and step out of that comfort zone.
Yeah, I think once you've chosen what your objectives are for a community, then you can pick the right one and not waste a whole bunch of years. I saw a whole bunch of people get involved early, right out of school, that wanted to get involved in B-Sides, for example. B-Sides is a great community success story. It was kind of like the counterculture to the big conferences. It felt more intimate. You got new speakers. It was more compassionate, maybe less competitive. But a very interesting thing happened where a bunch of new people, instead of looking at all the various types of security they can get into, we saw an overwhelming majority of the new entrants become pen testers because it was sexy or it was interesting.
Right, right.
And then 6 or 7 years later, you know, I look and these people are saying, I need to get out of pen testing into something more challenging, more satisfying, more meaningful. And I'm not for a second putting down penetration testing. It's more a matter of, I think it's the old measure twice, cut once thing. And if you know what your goals and objectives are, you're going to seek that kind of mentoring, that kind of soft skill development, technical skill development, and you'll choose the right watering holes. There are mashups to your question earlier, like DEF CON seems to be a little bit of everything, including, you know, government spooks. So there are places where we all get together. It's almost like our Burning Man. But in general, you see a lot of specialization. I was deeply allergic to the, you know, compliance community, for example. So it caused interesting rifts when someone said, PCI is the most important thing. And I said, actually, human life is the most important thing. And neither one of us are wrong. They're both important. We just want different specializations, right?
Let me jump in and let you know that we only have 15 minutes left on the live portion. We have 30 minutes on the chat. So if you, I hope the audience will collect up some questions and bring those in when we go to the chat at the bottom of the hour. But I was hoping that in the context of this conversation, we could walk away with a few things, specific things that people could look into, that they might be able to participate in, that they might either not know about or maybe they know about and they really haven't had a chance to dig in yet. And Josh, when you're talking about motivations, I see two, at the very highest level, I see two motivations. One is yourself and the other is, you know, your community or the world at large. We have in security opportunities to do both of those things. We have professional associations that help develop your career and let you network with people that are like you, maybe help you find a better job, maybe help you get better at your job, and that kind of thing. Maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the opportunities there, and then I'd like to, before we get done, I'd like to get into some things that you can do kind of that are designed to help the people at large and, you know, and kids and communities and that kind of thing, understanding security better. So let me just start if we can just kind of briefly talk about some of the opportunities that might be available to you if you're looking to find others who are like you, who are security professionals, and you want to talk with them, have conversations, maybe get some education, you know, that kind of thing. What are some of the places that you guys see as being the you know, the first places you would go?
Do you want to jump on that one first, Josh?
Sure, broad brushstrokes. Yeah, you do. Well, there's local things, right? There's a lot of city sec, so different cities like BeanSec is the Boston one, and there's different ones in different major cities in the world. So there's the local ones to figure out who's around you that you can see in person if you don't have a big travel budget. There's a lot of cities have ISSA chapters. There's a few cities that have NASIG and AISG. We can actually put some of the links into our comments in the chat period. There's a B-Sides in a lot of these cities. It's become a way for small cities that don't have a big con to have at least a common namespace and a consistent, semi-consistent experience. There's also ISC Squared, which I'm sure JJ will talk about internationally. For me, I think it's more personal. It's about mentoring and being mentored. And I heard a great quote, one should have more than one mentor, but fewer than a dozen. And what I really see is if there's skills or character traits that I want to emulate and integrate into my own professional development and make me more effective at my mission, I don't think that they're separate. I think being a more effective individual is good for any of your motivations or any of your missions. So I think you have to both keep yourself sharp and the best version of you, but also find people who can compliment you or groom you, and often you learn more by teaching than you do by being the student. So those are a few things that come to mind.
Yeah, and I would kind of do a plus one on that from Josh's perspective of the mentorship thing, because, you know, the one thing I think we're all guilty of is, I hate to use the word ego, but there's just something inside of all of us where we feel like our value has to do with how smart we are and how much we can contribute in a tangible, intellectual way. And not that that's always wrong, but what we have to remember is that that's not always right. And so you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. In fact, if you are, you're in the wrong room. That's kind of like following Josh's comment of seeking out those mentors. So the biggest thing is, it doesn't matter if you're just getting started or you've been in the profession for a long time. You're not expected to know everything. If you do know everything, you're going to be really annoying to everybody else, so just keep your mouth shut. It's not bad to ask for help. If you don't know something, you know, I've been in this field for a very long time, and people will throw acronyms out, and they'll just keep talking like, you know, they're really cool and stuff, and I'll go, I'm sorry, I have no clue what that means. What does that mean? That doesn't make me less of a professional. Just ask for clarification. So never, ever be afraid to ask somebody, ask for clarification, ask for information, ask for help. That's how you learn and you grow. And the people that are going to help you are the people that you want to stick around, and the people that scoff at you for asking for help until you shouldn't have to ask these things, those are not the people that you want to hang around. So that's part of developing, you know, your mentorship and your community there.
Yeah, I think, it's a slight deviation. It's actually a really important segue. When we started I Am the Cavalry, one of the early participants and founding members was Katie Mazuris, and we all know Katie and her contributions. And she had this really profound point, which made sense at the time, but has become more profound with each passing day. She said, Josh, if we want to change the world, we have to first change ourselves. You know, we're very negative. We use a lot of jargon. We aren't very good listeners. We have an empathy deficit, right? And the funny thing is, empathy has become the killer app. Like, the thing, and it's been a really pleasant surprise, but all the successes that the Cavalry has had influencing the automotive industry, the medical device field, the use of the word cyber, you know, you used to make fun of ourselves, and in fact, large parts of the quote-unquote community still make fun of you for using the word cyber. But if you go to the Beltway and talk to public policymakers, that is the word. You got to use their language, and it's much like being an ambassador to a foreign country. You have to acclimate yourself to the culture, the jargon, the nomenclature, and meet them more than halfway. And what we've found is empathy has been the single most important skill to develop. And just like any other muscle, even though we think we were born without it, you can build that muscle. Now, the delight and surprise is that in the act of building empathy to work outside the echo chamber, we've actually become better employees, better teammates, better husbands and wives. We've been more effective, not just in our passion or altruistic mission, but in every interaction we're having. And this is like the biggest surprise and benefit of what it means to be part of a community. It's not simply joining a roster. It's making yourself capable of listening and teaming and compromising and translating. And the best way to be part of a community is to make internal changes that let you be the best part of a community and not just an individual competing for something.
Yeah, and I can tag on to that, Tim, and kind of get back to your first question, because we're so passionate about this. I know we kind of take the topic and we Play-Doh pull it every direction. But to speak to Josh's point about finding the right kind of people and finding the right things inside of yourself, you know, some of the specific places that have worked for me, Josh gave a list of several types of ways to participate in different local events and conferences. I did want to throw out a few of mine, too. And these are places where I found some truly amazing people that I consider to be, you know, not just professional mentors, but friends, colleagues, and people that I'm able to help now as a mentor. So, and the first, obviously, I'm on the board of ISC Square. So Josh mentioned there are ISC Square chapters around the world. I think we're somewhere around 150. Of course, a lot of those are in the U.S., but a lot of them are in other countries as well. Those are phenomenal, because you do not have to be an ISC Square certification holder to be in a chapter and to participate. So you can really give a lot to the community and build your own network and community that way. And I think that the number is something like half of the chapter members of ISC Squared are not actually ISC Squared members in the certificate sense. Aside from that, ISSA, I think Josh mentioned a couple of other organizations. There's also things like ISACA. These are places where I've found a lot of, and there's a lot of cross-pollination between these. So the one thing to always remember is that any of the local kind of chapter-driven organizations are local, and they are not managed, like the daily operations are not managed by kind of the mothership organization. So as you move from, you know, one chapter to another, whether it's between two different organizations or maybe, you know, even from one part of a state, if you moved to a different part of the state and you start going to those meetings, you're going to find that the tone and the feel and the focus of those people and those groups, just there's nuances, and sometimes they're small and sometimes they swing they vary a lot more. So part of it is really just sampling, like, you know, go taste test everybody and, you know, try each of these different groups and communities and go to a few meetings and talk to people and, you know, see what works for you. You'll find people, and a lot of times you'll find the same people across several groups, and they can help you, you know, continue to grow yourself.
Now, it's interesting. Has been recommended, just one really quick question, Tim. You're both talking about a lot of things that seem to be in-person meetings, and I have always found that to be important, but then I think maybe I'm just old because the kids today don't seem to need to see each other anymore. They just want to text or something. So do you feel like for the people who are also in the early stages of their career, is it important to actually be in the physical same spot as others in your community, or is it enough to just talk to each other online?
I feel mixed on this, and it varies, but I would say it has to be a mixture. We're definitely technically inclined, so I used to get a ton of value out of Twitter, for example, but they're high frequency, high pace, but low fidelity for authentic human connection. So some things require a phone call. Some things, in fact, we've been erring on video chat so that you can get tone and body language. Sometimes you just got to see people's expression. You know, the high-fidelity exchanges, the authentic human connections, ideally are in person or involve some sort of body language and tone of voice. It's really hard to have a meaningful, you know, bidirectionally empathetic conversation in 140 characters at a time. They tend towards flame wars and trolling as opposed to community building. And, you know, part of community is communion and fellowship with people, and there's no better way to do that than in person when you have the choice.
Yeah, I would jump right on that too and say the same thing, because it's great to interact with people online, and that's a great kind of entry point and a great way to keep up with people that you've already met and a great way to learn new things and learn about new people. But, you know, nothing will take the place of, you know, looking across the table at somebody and staring them in the eye when they tell you something, because, you know, there's a lot of attribution error about why people make certain comments. And my God, we take the cake on snarky. So you don't know if are they having a bad day? Are they just being snarky because they think it's funny? Do they really hate you? If you're looking at them in person, you're probably going to figure that out. If you're on Twitter or Skype chat or whatever you're on, God only knows what's going on, and you have to have that extra trust of, well, dear, you're really in a bad mood today. I'll come back tomorrow. So it does take a mix.
As I look at the clock here, we have about 3 minutes to go. I'm going to ask you some questions on the chat about places where people can go, both online and live, to talk to each other. But before we close out the live portion, I want to give you a chance to talk about, you know, whether it's, you know, efforts to do mentoring, efforts to do to help kids understand how to behave safely online. There are so many opportunities for security folks to use their skills to reach out to others and to help them. Do you want to, in this last few minutes, give a couple of examples of things that folks could get involved in that sort of go beyond themselves and into, you know, what they can do for others?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a big
fan. Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I'm a big fan of, you know, my mission and what gets me up in the morning is public safety and human life stuff. So the IamTheCavalry.org, it's CAVALRY, not Calvary, that's a different thing entirely. So IamTheCavalry.org is focused on technology that affects public safety and human life, and we have projects on cars, medical devices, critical infrastructure, and home IoT. There's another group called BuildItSecure.ly, or Build It Securely, which is much more focused on consumer electronics. I'm a huge fan of what Chris Hoff and others did with HackeedCon, really focused on getting kids early exposure, and the DEF CON version of that is Roots Asylum. It used to be DEF CON Kids. So I'm a big fan of engaging things that affect your family and your neighbors, something that is really personal to everyone. I think we're going to see substantive changes in security when it's something palpable to every citizen as opposed to something abstract that only this dark voodoo has to be done at security conferences. So those are my picks.
Yeah, I have a big list, but I'll hit on just a couple here because, you know, one of the things I think we miss is that there's a lot of studies done about how volunteering and kind of social contribution really greatly increases someone's professional and personal well-being. So ISC Squared has the Safe and Secure Online program, which is fantastic. It's a way for the professionals to go out and reach out to students in schools and really tackle some of the more uncomfortable issues like cyberbullying. And they do have some other curriculums for, the higher grades that get into some of the other topics as well. But that's a way to help change lives directly, and that's two communities, right? Because that's your home community where you live and where your kids go to school and where your neighbor's kids go to school. And then it's your industry community. It's your colleagues and your coworkers participating in that type of thing. And these are the kind of people you're going to meet at these little conferences, chapter meetings and stuff like that. So that's a big one. There's a lot of others out there. But that's one I definitely wanted to touch on. But, you know, the big part is, you know, giving back and contributing in whatever way is meaningful for you. Not, you know, let's not just complain about everything, kind of like what Josh says. Let's find that empathy and figure out if we need to change something, let's go change it.
That, to me, sounds like a great place for us to close out our live portion here, or our audio portion, and move into the live chat. Kurt, I'm going to let you get us out of here, and we'll look forward to talking to JJ and Josh a little bit more online, and hopefully getting we will make every effort to get some physical links out to people on things they can get involved in. So with that, Kurt?
Tim, thanks so much. This has been an absolutely wonderful show, and it's not over yet. As Tim said, it's time just to move the party over to the live text discussion. Now, once again, to take part in that, all you have to do is type your comment or question into the box marked your post, then click the red post button. Tim, Sarah, Josh, and JJ will be diving in there in just a moment. We look forward to the conversation. If you're enjoying this episode of Dark Reading Radio, if you're enjoying it in an on-demand version, we hope that you will come back next time for the live discussion. It's an important part of what makes this a great security community. And if you're enjoying radio, we do hope that you'll join us on Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time for Information Week Live, a roundup of the top stories in IT for the week. And rumor has it that we'll hear some more about what's been going on at Dark Reading as well. For Tim Wilson, Sarah Peters, and everyone here at Dark Reading Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll see you in that online discussion.